This is Marguerite Bennett, and I hope you enjoy this episode of Cave of Solitude.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Cave of Solitude, your comic book and pop culture podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony. Thank you for joining us this week. So recently, I was having a chat with fellow podcaster from the Comic Shenanigans podcast, Adam Chapman. He was asking me for some suggestions for topics that he could tackle for upcoming episodes on his show, and there was something in the back of my mind that was brewing, something I wanted to work on for the Cave of Solitude, which was to start a suggested reading list for people who maybe wanted to get into a new title or character that they had never ventured into before. Let's say, for instance, you've always read DC Comics, but now you want to try something from Marvel, because I was in that position once upon a time, or vice versa. Maybe you've always read Marvel and you want to try something from DC, or you're into the movies and you've never really read a comic book since you were a kid and you want to get back into the hobby. So you want to go to a comic book shop and you go in there and you do not know where to start. And that goes for anything, really, that you can have a hobby for. If you go to a record shop, if you want to go to a music store, whatever the case may be, buying tools at Home Depot. When you're out of your depth, it can be very intimidating and daunting to the point where you're discouraged and you don't want to give it a shot. So I thought, before I get into suggested reading lists for specific characters, for the layman who is getting into comic books maybe for the first time, I thought maybe we could start this off by discussing the different eras and ages that exist in the comic book world. Now, when I say ages, it's debated, of course, but for the most part, what is definitely accepted is that there's a golden age of comics that's from 1938 to about 1956, and then 1956 to maybe around 1971, you get the Silver Age of comic books. And then after that, of course, following Silver is the Bronze Age, which leads into about the year 1984, 85. And then the next part is debated. They call that the Modern Age. Some say there's a Dark Age in between that is from 1986 until 1998. So I think it's safe to say that after the Bronze Age, when we get into, you know, 1986, when the Watchmen and things like that come out, there's a lot of debate of when this starts and begins, if it ever even ended. I was actually speaking with Kevin Boyd and Sam Noir today via chat on Facebook Messenger. It was a lot of fun reading all of the different ideas that they have and understanding these different eras. But Kevin said actually that he likes to separate the eras in increments of 14 years, which actually makes sense when you consider the creative directions as well as some of the business things that were taking place, culturally, how things are affected and what how they're affecting the books and stories that are being told. And then, of course, there's somewhat a generation turnover between creators and things like that. So I was thinking to myself, let's do a suggested reading list section of the podcast that we can add to our archives for people to be able to look to for things that they want to read and give them a little bit of context as to what they'll discover if they do choose to read books from the Golden Age, Silver Age, etc., etc. And why I thought that I should start this off as like a primer or a Cole's Notes for a person getting into different titles is because these different eras will strongly affect your initial reaction when you look at these books or read these books because of the climate socially of things that are going on or some of the restrictions that are being put on these books. So if, for instance, many comic book fans would all agree that the Dark Phoenix saga is a classic X-Men story, but it'll read very differently coming from the viewpoint of the early 1980s with Chris Claremont's dialogue. The artwork is beautiful, the story is fantastic, but it's very verbose. It might not be what you're expecting to read. So when you see things through the proper lens, and when you do go into a comic book shop or a bookstore, if you want choose to read digitally, everything is available again. There's nothing that has been printed in the past that isn't getting some sort of a reprinted or reproduction treatment. And if it hasn't come out yet, it will eventually. And that's one of the hard parts of collecting and reading comics. There's current things that are being put out there every single week. There's like 500 different single issue comic books putting out. But then at the same time, so many great classic stories are being reprinted and reformatted. And at the same time, some stuff that is very forgettable is being put on the shelf. So how do you sift through it? How are you going to get the best bang for your buck? And most importantly, make the most of your time when you're choosing to pick something off of the shelf. Now, I've seen some YouTube videos where people can break these eras down in 15 minutes, and I think that's absolutely amazing because there's so many details that go into looking into these eras, to breaking down the nuances of them, the business practices, all those type of things. So to break it down to 15 minutes is incredible. I'm going to try to do it in less than half hour, 40 minutes. Please bear with me. I want to make this informative. I want to make this a simple guide. And most importantly, I want you to be entertained in some capacity. I don't want to bore you to death. So before we begin, I just want to give credit where credit's due. Shout out to Kevin Boyd, Sam Noir, as well as Adam Chapman, who all gave me different ideas and impressions for this subject. Also, I'm going to be borrowing from different websites who have written pieces that describe either the art style and content style, the way things were written. And there's a give shout out to 99designs.ca. Their article, The Amazing Stylistic History of Comic Books Going Through the Ages, sparklecitycomics.com, that discuss the what are the different comic book ages, and trying to see if there's anything else. I think that's it for now. So these websites, I'm not going to read them verbatim, but they are going to be informative to help me break down for you in the best simplistic way the type of things that we're going to look for. So we're 7 minutes in. We've got to get this show on the road. So the Golden Age of Comics. The Golden Age of Comics begins with 1938's Action Comics number one. Of course, that is the introduction of Superman to the world. That was, you know, your standard bearer of what a superhero would be and is almost the definitive version of a superhero to this day. Now, the Golden Age was a very idyllic time in the storytelling and the art style. There's a clear distinction between the good and evil characters. Superheroes were happy-go-lucky do-gooders, except in the case in Batman, who came out in Detective Comics 1939, not long after Superman came out. Because of the popularity, more characters like Superman were being created and released. Batman at that time is not so much the Batman you may know today, in the sense that he actually had a gun on him. He didn't have a problem throwing some people out of windows and killing people. So when people say, oh yeah, Batman should kill because, you know, in the original Batman comic, there's precedence for it, that's fine. But it was a different time, and it didn't last very long until they changed that about the character. So along with Batman, we get Robin. But during this time, as superheroes are catching fire and gaining popularity, you're also getting the Justice Society of America and All-Star Comics. Wonder Woman is introduced there. You've got the initial versions of Green Lantern and The Flash, as well as in 1941... you have World War II is in full force. And Marvel Comics at the time, which was known as Timely, released a character or debut a character that was created by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, Captain America. And if you've seen Captain America, the First Avenger, and they're handing out those copies of the Captain America comic, that was a thing that they really did during that time for the soldiers who were fighting in the war. Comic books became a lot of war propaganda. A lot of times you would see them fighting people who really existed and were associated with the axis of evil. It wasn't uncommon. So during this time, superheroes were the most popular thing. Children were reading them. Soldiers were reading them in the war. They were morale boosters. But eventually, once the war finished, the popularity of superheroes dwindled. of course, Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman were still popular, but the different comic book companies were now starting to focus on different genres to tell their stories. So you have romance comics, Western comics, true crime comics, as well as sci-fi and horror. I don't know if I mentioned sci-fi, but horror comics were also part of the mix. And there was some very provocative stuff that was being done in the comic books, to the point that during the golden age of comics, there was a book published called Seduction of the Innocent from Frederick Wortham, who had attacked comic books as being the reason for juvenile delinquency of that era. And it was gaining a lot of steam to the point that Congress was paying attention to this, and there was a lot of censorship. The Comic Code Authority came into play, and there was all different types of censorship that was placed on comics at that time that stifled a lot of the storytelling and potential artwork. And some people had even been convinced that eventually comic books were on the way out as a form of entertainment because of this harsh criticism that came along with Seduction of the Innocent. So how can we sum up the golden age of comics? Well, it is the origin era of the superhero, if you will. Of course, there are many, many different comic books outside of the superhero genre, as I said, that were being published during this time. But this is definitely the birthplace of some of the most iconic characters, especially from DC Comics. And of course, Captain America, it was extremely influenced and used as war propaganda during that time. What is some of the art styles of the Golden Age? They were printed in a booklet form. Comics didn't deviate far from how they were presented in the newspapers, telling a very straightforward story with basic sequential settings. You know, the paneling was very simple. The artwork was relatively simple as well. Of course, you had comic book titans such as Jack Kirby working in the industry at the time, as well as Steve Ditko and John Romita Sr. But because of the heightened popularity of people jumping onto comic books as a form of entertainment, they were getting anybody who can kind of draw off of the street to put something out there. So the quality wasn't always the best. As well, there were a lot more dialogue than imagery in these books than what you may see in today's comics if you pick one up off the shelf today. So if you were to go into a shop and they have a lot of omnibi, I'm not sure what the plural is, but they have a lot of collected editions of Golden Age comics that are nice to have for those who are really in love with the history of comics, I would say. Because at this time, the storytelling in comic books, they were kind of one and done stories, whereas later on you'd have a lot of connective tissue where if something happened to a character, there would be ramifications going forward in later issues, because it became like a serialized story where things, it was almost like a television show, right? We can understand that. But if you think of Golden Age comic books, even in the superhero genre, like Archie Comics, when you pick up an Archie Digest off of the racks when you're in a lineup at the grocery store and you're flipping through something, you know, one story, Archie will be dating Betty. And the next story, Archie's dating Veronica. And there's no mention of what happened, who broke up, and what the cause, an effect of anything that happened in the story before. It's just, you know the world, you know who's who, you know who Archie's friends are, and just read and have fun with it. And that's kind of the feel that you get with Golden Age comics of that time. So just know that that's what you're going to get. It's more of a simplistic type of storytelling, very black and white, good versus evil. And the artwork isn't going to be extremely detailed, or the storytelling won't be as sophisticated as you will find later on in the later ages. So now we're going to get into the Silver Age of comics that is said to have begun in 1956 and ends in around 70-71. So how do we know it begins in 1956? Well, the consensus is, popular opinion is that the Silver Age begins with the debut of Barry Allen Flash in Showcase number 4. Now, as we mentioned, in the Golden Age of comics, superheroes, in the later years of the Golden Age, superheroes had dwindled in popularity and they had ventured into different genres of storytelling. But now DC Comics, Julie Schwartz, the editor-in-chief at that time, wanted to kind of redefine and do a superhero renaissance, if you will, if that's the right term. So they have the Flash be reintroduced. And this Flash is a little bit different than the one that had existed during the World War II era, who was part of the Justice Society of America. Now this is a Flash from another world. And it introduces a multiverse within the DC publishing universe itself, right? Where there's multiple heroes that exist on different worlds, and there's not just one Flash, there's multiple Flashes. And if you watch the Flash TV show, you'll understand what we're saying. This would later on cause confusion, which would be kind of cleaned up, but this creates a whole new era of popularity into the superhero genre again. So you later get Hal Jordan, Green Lantern, who is the Green Lantern that when we close our eyes, we see with the black and green the green and black costume, and he's, you know, a space cop, and there's a whole Green Lantern core that he's a part of, and it really opens up the storytelling and the universes that they can explore. Of course, as time would go on into 1961, the Justice League is formed, and I forget the issue of Brave and the Bold, but they team up all of these superheroes. So you've got a Wonder Woman and Green Lantern and the Flash and a Martian Manhunter. And I'm not sure if Superman was in that issue, but this, you know, blows kids' minds at the time to see all of their heroes actually know each other and they're living on the same Earth. And I don't got to buy Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman if I want to read all of my characters. I'm just going to buy the Justice League because they're all there. And that creation of the Justice League spawns or sparks the competitive nature of Martin Goodman over at Timely Comics, which at this point had now turned into Marvel. And seeing the success of the Justice League, he approaches his nephew by marriage, Stan Lee, to come up with a team to have a book to compete against the Justice League. So Stan Lee, who at this point wanted to kind of get out of the comics industry because I guess he felt that there was no forward movement for him for his career when he wanted to be a prose novelist, he was like, I'll do one more story and I'm going to tell the story that I want to tell since it's the last one. And him and Jack Kirby come up, of course, with the legendary first family of Marvel, the Fantastic Four. And at this point, everything blows wide open and a whole era of creativity and renewed interest in comic books as a medium, especially in the superhero genre, just blows up like never before. Now, what's noteworthy is that this reemergence or interest that's redeveloped in superheroes is not the same as it was in the Golden Age, because you got to think people are now coming back from a world war. It was a horrific world war. So the idea of these caped crusaders and superheroes that overcome every great evil that they feel like doing just because they're the good guys that they'll always win is not as convincing. So there was a decline in the way that the superheroes were told in such a simplistic black and white matter that now, especially on Marvel's end, they're starting to add a little bit of nuance to the characters that they're creating. Are they superheroes or are they monsters? And keep in mind, when we think of the Golden Age of comics, World War II was a big influence on a lot of the storytelling at that time, and post-World War, what kind of things they would publish. Now they're living in the age where it's the space race. It's the new frontier age. John F. Kennedy has been elected. John F. Kennedy gets assassinated. You're also living in the era where civil rights movement was at its height. So there's all of these things happening socially that are now being used as inspiration in a lot of the comic book storytelling that Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, John Romita, all the people who are working specifically at Marvel, in my understanding, because they became a leader in the publishing industry during this time. They went from a little company that could and barely make it in many ways to, by the end of this Silver Age, they're kind of the leader in what's new and fresh and what everybody's into. DC Comics becomes, you know, your dad's comics, and Marvel Comics is where the new ideas, the realism, a real world is where these characters are. They live in New York City. They don't live in Metropolis. They're from a city that I can go to, and they know each other. So that grounding of these fantastic characters is what the Silver Age brings you. So during this age as well, there was, you know, the Cuba Missile Crisis and all of this fear of nuclear arms and radiation, and all of the characters at this time reflect that, right? Stan Lee takes the popularity of science fiction and people's interest in the space race and uses a lot of pseudoscience in the type of stories he's telling. So there's things like mutants, and the Incredible Hulk is affected by gamma radiation. Bruce Banner is affected by gamma radiation, turns into the Incredible Hulk. Peter Parker is bitten by a radioactive spider. Even DC Comics, The Flash is a freak accident, right? He gets struck by lightning, and all these different chemicals is what gives him his power. So there's a lot more complexity to the characters and their origin, instead of them just being from another planet or from a paradise island where they're basically presented as gods, as it were. So now you're getting a lot of the building blocks of the real superhero universes that we get today in our comics still. It's important to note as well, I'm going through the history of these ages, really focusing on the hallmark moments from DC and Marvel Comics, because they're the big two. You look at what's popular in pop culture today. The movies are, you know, DC and specifically Marvel movies that are the biggest thing in the world right now, right? But it is important to note other publishers that were making waves and were influential to the comic book culture as well as to the creators of the time. There's things like Harvey Comics, there were Dell Comics, Gold Key Comics at that time. During the Silver Age, it's also important to note the Batman television show was extremely popular for the few years that it was on the air. And it was kind of a reflection of the silliness that Batman was in the comics as well. It was kind of playing it for satire, but as kids, we loved it. So it's interesting to note, now that I think about it, a lot of things that usher in the Silver Age and kick off the Marvel Universe is kind of inspired by things that DC started, but really Marvel takes it away and goes somewhere completely different with it, where DC starts to be a little bit silly and not quite as engaging as the Marvel comics were. Also, I want to make mention of Underground Comics, where Robert Crumb and Gilbert Shelton were making their comic books at the time that were influential to creators to this day. So it's not just Marvel and DC that are significant during this time. There were other comic book companies, of course, that were very influential and are still very celebrated and studied down to this day. Now that I mentioned those names, shame on me when I was speaking on the Golden Age of comics as well as the Silver Age. I didn't mention one of the greatest comic book creators, artists, writers of all time, which is Will Eisner, who was known for his series The Spirit, which wasn't a Marvel or DC comic, but is one of the most influential creators who many comic book artists and writers themselves revere in the highest regard. So even down to this day, you would be hard-pressed to find any comic book artist or writer who doesn't revere this man for the work that he did and the influence he had on the comic book industry, having never been a person to do superheroes, and is considered, you know, you got Will Eisner, Jack Kirby, and then everybody else after them, Steve Ditko, et cetera, et cetera. Those guys are the titans of the industry, amongst many, but those are the names that immediately come to your mind of the most influential creators. I didn't mention him during the Golden Age, and I wanted to make sure that I gave it the proper attention. So what can you expect if you were to pick up then a Silver Age collection of some sort, whether it be a Fantastic Four omnibus or an Epic collection or even a DC omnibus, something from that era that is the Silver Age? Well, from what I know of what I've read, because I haven't read everything, I'm far from being a comic book historian or aficionado, no matter how much I'm trying to pose as one right now. I think of the Silver Age very much in Stan Lee's voice and Jack Kirby's art, as well as, you know, Steve Ditko and John Romita, and you got Don Heck drawing the Avengers at that time. John Buscema, of course, just incredible, incredible talents. But I hear Stan Lee's voice when I read those comics. It's very bombastic. It's very hammy. But there's a lot of... they're going places with these books that inspire so many people that come after them. It really generates a fandom for the first time. And so when you're reading these books and it seems completely ridiculous, just think of the excitement of Stan Lee writing it for young people to capture their attention. And you'll be able to read it a lot more easier with a lot more entertainment value. And the artwork, I mean, the ideas, the visionaries that these guys were at that time is pretty remarkable. When you look at Jack Kirby art, everyone pretty much tries to copy something that he was doing at the time in the energy and the force and the power that he shows on a page. No one did that quite like him. Now, for myself personally, when I would go back and look at that artwork and hear, well, this guy's the best artist of all time, or he's the king, or whatever the case may be, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, the artwork looks, at first glance, kind of ugly. It doesn't look as appealing as what you might go into a comic book shop now and see a poster of a Jim Lee Batman, or that idea of that hyper-stylized X-Men that is so sharp and there's a realism to it. During this time, there's a lot of... it's kind of what inspires that pop art. And there's a lot of energy in what people would later call Kirby Crackle. But it's not getting as individually stylistic just yet, but it is spawning that era that is to come. And the reason why I say that, when you see Steve Ditko's art versus Jack Kirby's art, it's very distinct. But everybody in Marvel at that time, from Stan Lee's edict, he would tell his artists and his inkers to try to make everything work and kind of look like Jack Kirby's art because of the energy and force that was behind it. He had a way of putting things together composition-wise in order for the whole universe to feel like it was in a universe, make it look like Jack's work, since him, Jack Kirby, and Stan Lee created their fair share of what is we know as the Marvel Universe. So before we jump into the Bronze Age of comic books, I just want to do a quick checklist of some of the notable artists during this time that did worthwhile work to look into. So you have Kurt Swan, who is famous for being the Superman artist, pretty much the definitive Superman artist for many, many years. Gene Colan, who... if I went through his bibliography of all the things that he's worked on, it's a very, very long list. Steve Ditko is most famous for Doctor Strange, and more specifically, The Amazing Spider-Man, being the co-creator of that book. Definitely check those things out, but that will, when we do a Spider-Man suggested reading list, we'll go more into detail for that. Gil Kane, who was the co-creator of the Hal Jordan version of Green Lantern, who went on to draw just about everything else in comics. Anything during the Silver Age, Bronze Age, you'll find a character that was drawn by Gil Kane at some point. Jack Kirby, of course, that goes without saying, he's the king. And then you have Joe Kubert, who is also extremely influential to the point where many artists today go to the Joe Kubert School of Art to really, it's almost a boot camp for the best artists in the business go to the Joe Kubert School of Art. That's, you know, the legacy that he has. And then at the tail end of the Silver Age in the late 60s, you've got artists Neil Adams and Jim Steranko, who are really become game changers in what they brought to the table stylistically to the art form of comic book storytelling. So let's move into the Bronze Age of comics now, which begins in 1970-1971 to, I think popular opinion is 1985. Now in 1971, Jack Kirby leaves Marvel Comics. He kind of had his fair share of dealing with some of the politics of being Stan Lee's co-creator and not getting as much of the reverence and credit that was due him, since he was really doing his fair share of creating all of those characters and universes, considering he was the plotter and artist. So he leaves Marvel Comics and goes to DC, which was a very big deal at the time. It was, I'm trying to think of how we can compare it. It would almost be when, if you're a wrestling fan, if Hulk Hogan goes to, you know, WCW after being with the WWE for so many years, their star, their legend, the person who made all of this happen is leaving. It's the end of an era. So Stan Lee goes over to DC Comics and creates all of these wonderful, zany, crazy ideas with the Fourth World, which is, if you've watched the Justice League movie recently that came out, if you haven't, that's okay. But if you've seen the Justice League movie that recently came out, the Fourth World is, you know, Darkseid and New Genesis, almost like its counterpart would be sort of like Asgard. So he creates a whole new world in DC Comics that is still being used and discovered up until this day by many creators. It's so vast. It's got so many ideas. And that marks a whole new era in comics. The Bronze Age begins when Jack Kirby leaves and goes to DC. But what's different now about the Bronze Age is that, obviously, by its name, it's not as shiny and wonderful as the Golden Age or experimental as the Silver Age. It's we've gone through a few decades now of comics, a decade full of superhero adventures and pseudo sci-fi stories that Stan and Jack brought to the table. They fought all kinds of different villains in the Silver Age. Many of the villains were, you know, socialists, communists, and then you had your cosmic entities like Galactus and the Silver Surfer that were thrown into the mix. How can you know, keep this fresh? How can you keep the what haven't our heroes faced yet? So in the 70s, in the Bronze Age, your heroes start to get a lot more complexity. They already had them in the Silver Age with characters, their motivations not being as clearly defined as superheroes. You had Peter Parker, who was motivated by guilt, and you had, you know, Iron Man, who was a industrialist and war profiteer who had a crisis of conscience and what leads them to become the heroes that they are. But now in the Bronze Age, you've got the social climate again is changing. This is post the Vietnam War, post the civil rights movement, where a lot of crap happened. So the climate of people's social awareness and dissatisfaction and this desire to be free and discover things, anti-government sort of attitude is at a high post the Vietnam War. And so some of the things that you're going to see in the Bronze Age, you see characters now fighting drug addiction or alcohol addiction. And there's nothing that a superhero can necessarily do to fix that. In, you know, a Spider-Man story during this era where his best friend has a drug addiction. In Green Lantern and Green Arrow, which was drawn by Neil Adams, as we mentioned before. Beautifully drawn book written by Denny O'Neill. Green Arrow's sidekick is a junkie. And these are things that they're putting in the comics, kind of putting up the middle finger to the comics code authority, if you will, saying, you know what, we're not going to kneel to your demands anymore. We got to be creative, and we're going to be telling these stories that are going to be relatable to the audience that is growing up with us. So a lot more social issues are now being more overtly addressed, whereas in the Silver Age, you would have had the X-Men, which were kind of an allegory of the civil rights movement with how people viewed mutants. And you had, you know, your Professor Xavier, which resembled Martin Luther King, and Magneto, who resembled a Malcolm X. Now it's becoming more clearly defined in the stories that they're telling. There's a reemergence of the X-Men during this era, which was a team that allowed for there to be diversity explored and representation explored in the comics. You also have the creation of characters that are from different races and a lot more street level characters like a Luke Cage and an Iron Fist, as well as Jon Stewart on the Green Lantern Corps. So more colorful, diverse faces are being added to these books. So in, you know, the golden age where Captain America could punch Hitler in the face, now how does he deal with issues that you can't necessarily get rid of just by fighting them? How do you deal with intangible foes like bigotry or addiction? Or in one of the famous Captain America stories that take place in the 70s, he uncovers a conspiracy plot and realizes that the president of the United States, who is supposed to resemble Richard Nixon, is the one behind it. It leaves, you know, Captain America disenchanted with his country and everything that he thinks he believes in. These are the kind of stories that are going to be explored. And I really am having a great time doing a deep dive into this era of comics and a lot of the epic collections that are being collected, where you are getting these stories expanded in discovering who these people really are deep down inside. So you've got that aspect happening in both of the DC and Marvel side of things. And then as well, you've got people coming in such as Steve Gerber and Steve Englehart and Jim Starlin, who are exploring the cosmic areas of the Marvel universe. And Jim Starlin ushers in Thanos. You know, we are introduced to Thanos. Does that ring a bell to anybody? Of course, right? So it's really exciting to be able to go to the genesis of this era and see these characters be either redeveloped, rediscovered, or created for the first time, opening doors to all these different places that we're going to even now, into this day of the cinematic era, if you will. Another thing that is noteworthy, I feel the most noteworthy thing of this era when you're reading and looking at the artwork, is that the people who are creating during this time are the first generation, I could be wrong, but the first generation of creators who were proud to be comic book writers and artists. And it was like their goal to be working for these companies, because they grew up reading Stan and Jack's books, or they grew up watching Superman and the Batman television shows. So now for them to be part of this creative process where they're adding to the tapestry of these characters, you got some notable names such as Len Wein and Marv Wolfman, and George Perez on art, and then John Byrne comes into the picture. Jim Starlin, as I mentioned, Steve Gerber, Steve Englehart. I don't want to leave anybody out here, but there's all of these writers. Jerry Conway, I can't forget Jerry Conway, who took over the reins of The Amazing Spider-Man for Stan Lee. Roy Thomas, extremely influential, probably the first real fan who became an essential part of writing and editing and taking over for what Stan Lee had been doing. Roy Thomas was that guy. And then you have Denny O'Neill and people like Roger Stern, who would add so many things to Chris Claremont. The groundwork that was laid before them, they really built upon and added all of the finishing touches to the world that was being built before them. So it was a time where fandom was growing and the stories were becoming engaging on a different level. And I think this is also the era where the niche of buying and collecting comics was becoming more and more prevalent, where they saw that there was a market for people who just wanted to collect and were invested in these books. So you see the first specialty direct market shops starting to pop up, because comic books initially were just a newsstand thing. So this era is very influenced by all of these different factors. So what are some of the art styles of the Bronze Age? I'm going to go to 99designs.ca because I'm not very good at describing artwork. So they say in bullet point form, the comics at this time traded in surrealism and experimentation for photorealistic depictions of an urban landscape, which is absolutely true. The alter ego side of the superhero's life is given more panel time, and sensational costumes took a backseat to depictions of everyday people, which is one of the things that I'm really enjoying discovering during this era myself. And the depth of focus and lighting in these pages gave comics a cinematic style, heightening the reader's emotional connection. See, these are the type of things that I'm aware of when I'm reading them, but I can't put them into words. That's why I'm going to these different websites to help me out with the description of these things. So thank you to 99designs.ca if you happen to be listening. So checking the time now, we are at the 40-minute mark, and I haven't even gotten into the modern age of comics, which can be broken up into a few different eras. So I said I'd keep the show at 40 minutes. I'm going to keep my word. We're going to put a pin in it now. I will post these episodes up as a part one and a part two. Hopefully, you're not bored out of your skull. If you have been listening up to this point, thank you very much. I hope it's been informative, and I'm looking forward to doing the suggested reading lists even more when I consider all the things that I'm not including in this discussion, because there is so many things that we could get into. But it's more to give you a feel of what each era brought to the table, the feel of the comics, how they're going to read. There's going to be the silliness that we kind of got to overlook, moments where we got to, you know, suspend our disbelief a little bit more than others, but then other times where we'll be very engaged with the advancements that the art form had been making. So with all that said, if you do want to go to a comic book shop, hit up Cyber City Comics if you are in the North York, Toronto area. It's my local comic book shop. I love it. The staff there is great, extremely helpful. You can order anything from them. Let them know that Eric sent you from the Cave of Solitude. And if you end up getting something, enjoy your reading, enjoy your time traveling through the pages and panels of comic books. So once again, thank you so much for listening. I'm Eric Anthony. This is the Cave of Solitude. You can email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. Leave us a review on iTunes. And follow us on Facebook and on Instagram. We always engage with people who engage with us. And once again, thank you to Kevin Boyd, Sam Noir, Adam Chapman. Shout out to Martin Slam Duncan from the Fastball Special. Check out that show. And of course, we can't do a Cave of Solitude podcast without shouting out our good buddy, Shane the Sheriff Heron. Check out his books, Black Hole Hunters Club, Morris, Cauldron. He's getting too many that I'm having a hard time remembering. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will be back soon.